Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Hello, good morning, welcome. Thanks for hanging out. Come on in. How you doing? Good? Cool. Today on the show, well, this is Speak Up, I guess I should tell you, here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, and I guess I could introduce myself, although I feel like we're already pretty well acquainted. I'm Jesse, the Public Affairs and Talk Coordinator here at CJSF, and as I mentioned, this is Speak Up, the show where we play a whole bunch of talk content, all kinds of different stuff. And today on the show, we have it's a real magazine type show. I count at least five separate talk pieces that we're going to make our way through. Most of it's local, one coming from the Prince George area. And before we get started, I do just want to acknowledge that I'm very grateful and lucky and privileged to be broadcasting from the unceded ancestral territory of the Hunkaminam and Squamish speaking peoples, who have been living here and working and telling stories since time immemorial. And that as I do this radio thing, I'm always trying to be mindful of that and the place where I am and the people who came before. And I hope you will think about that as well. Never hurts. So we are going to talk about, as I mentioned, a whole bunch of different things. We've got a segment about the Neil Squire Society's holiday hackathon, and a recap of the new Westminster Crisis Response Pilot Project interview that I played last week, repackaged as kind of a cool news story. A recap of a lecture, all sorts of stuff. But as we usually do on this Thursday morning Speak Up, we're going to start with some local music. Lila Gray, raised in the mountains of BC, now calls Vancouver home, has appeared on my other show, the Vancouver Mixtape, a couple times, and will be appearing again this Sunday as a guest curator of the show to talk about her new album, Scared of the Dark, You Should Be Too, which came out on November 22nd, so last Friday. And it's really cool, kind of folky, dream poppy stuff. I mean, guess what? You're going to get a chance to evaluate for yourself what you think this might be. This track is a bit, sonically it sounds a lot like the rest of the album, but linguistically it features some Francais, some French, and is a duet with Michael Isaac. This one is called T'es mon âme, which, if you're not fluent in French, I will do you the favor of translating to say it means you're my man. Right here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM, T'es mon âme by Lila Gray and Michael Isaac. Je te pose,
si tu m'aimes, la pause entre tes jours de nos, ce sommeil un purgatoire. Mon corps a besoin de ta peau, c'est une partie de mon rêve de toi. Même ce n'est pas un outil, je dois avoir toi 6 fois each week. Even if you want me for Hey, oh,
By Lila Gray and Michael Isaac from the record Afraid of the Dark, Scared of the Dark, You Should Be Too, which is out now. You can hear more from Lila Gray on the Vancouver Mixtape on Sunday night from 8 to 9 p.m. with me and my friend Jamie. Cool. We're now going to move into the first talk segment of the show. This one comes from community radio journalist Danny, who has been with us for the last month and a bit. Producing all sorts of cool stories, including this one, which is grew out of a lecture by Nick Blomley called Belongings Matter. Danny attended and then followed up with Nick, so we're going to hear that now.
This is Danny, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. And recently, on October 30th, 2024, Nick Blomley, a professor of geography at Simon Fraser University, hosted a lecture as part of the 2024 Warren Gill Lecture Series on his findings from Belongings Matter, a Canada-wide research project that seeks to document and explain the systematic confiscation and devaluation of houseless people's belongings. Nick was joined in conversation with research partner and associate professor at the Allard School of Law at the University of British Columbia, Alexandra Flynn, as well as Connie Long, an Indigenous advocate for vulnerable communities with lived experience who organizes in Chilliwack and Abbotsford. During the lecture, Blomley spoke of the precariousness of unhoused populations, belongings, and possessions, as well as the lack of options that are afforded for these populations when it comes to safe areas for these belongings. Another major part of the lecture spoke of the fact that when unhoused, you often are required to be mobile, which is something that can be made more difficult when you are constantly having to be around your belongings to make sure that they're secure. This is something that is touched upon within the lecture, as well as the overall research from Belongings Matter.
Now, belongings matter to everyone. Most of us, of course, can protect our belongings. Most of us have that expectation that our belongings will be with us in the future. If someone took those belongings away from us, I'm sure we would feel affronted, upset, disappointed, and concerned. But we would also, I hope, have remedies or solutions, ways that we could deal with that loss. We could buy a new phone, perhaps. Or we could call the authorities and have that possession returned to us. Belongings matter. Belongings matter, of course, for poor people, for marginalized people, for houseless people. This is a quote from an interview I did in Surrey with a woman we'll call Bella. And what Bella made clear to me was that when you're houseless, when you're living precariously, actually all you have are your possessions. Because, of course, you don't have an apartment that you can call your own. So your belongings, in that sense, are, while they're important for everyone, perhaps they're even more important for marginalized people.
Later on in the lecture, Nick Blomley goes over the ways in which unhoused populations are often required to move their belongings in order to keep them safe. In this instance, he uses specific examples from unhoused people living in Abbotsford.
But what people also told us was that they were constantly being moved because their belongings were objectionable. It wasn't so much that the person was objectionable, not illegal to sit in a park, but their stuff was objectionable. So if you're living outside, the question of where you put your stuff becomes a very profound problem. Adding stuff, belongings to the equation, changes the equation in important ways. And these are a couple of quotes from Abbotsford, in which people talked about the kind of bizarre, almost Kafkaesque experience of putting your stuff somewhere and then somebody in officialdom coming along and telling them to move their belongings just a couple of feet. And then moving it again a couple of feet. And if you don't, of course, you lose your stuff. You pack up your gear and move over here and undo, and somebody else comes along and says, you can't be here. You've got to go somewhere else. Where are we supposed to go? I don't know, but anywhere but here. What do you mean, anywhere but here? There is nowhere that you can be, in other words, that your stuff is not at risk.
After the lecture, Nick Blomley was able to sit down with Alexandra Flynn and Connie Long. During this discussion, Connie Long was able to give some of her perspective on this issue.
The hum is, I guess, just what it sounds like. It's just this constant, almost noise for people who are living precariously or dealing with a lot of marginalized things, right? It's constant. It's just consistent. It's, say, so the person who lives in a tent down on Gladys in Abbotsford, a tent city, and they become sick. They can't even go to the hospital because of all their stuff, you know, that shopping cart that they push around, that a lot of people look and go, oh gosh, why does he have so much stuff? You know, like just like tone it down a bit, you know? But these things are really important to this person. And now this person's really sick and he can't, once he goes to the hospital, his stuff is fair game. Your stuff is taken from you by your peers, by your municipality, by people or by organizations that you think you can trust, like the police, people who offer social services.
Later on in the discussion, Connie Long provides some insight on her own lived experiences as someone who was previously unhoused. This is some of what she had to say.
So very, very hard. As a result of that, though, I was put in situations where I was able to identify with people that I used to look at, like, what do you have all that stuff? Why are you pushing around that cart? And now I know why. And I think it's important to share that with the rest of the world so that people understand. And I mean, if you're not part of the solution, then you're definitely part of the problem if you're sticking your face in it. Mm-hmm. I've walked down the road and have somebody throw a shoe at me, you know, and that was rough. Because it was like a car full of young kids, like around my kids' age. And the shame that you wear after you've lost your stuff. Because in society, we are, you know, we look at each other, oh, they have all of this. They have all of that. Yes. And that's what makes them amazing and important. But what makes that person more important than the guy who just lost his job, you know, and was living paycheck to paycheck and is now staying at the shelter?
At the end of the discussion, Nick Blomley, Connie Long, and Alexandra Flynn go over some of the proposed solutions for supporting unhoused populations, as well as some of the work that is already being done in this regard. Please take a listen.
13 years ago, when we took the city of Abbotsford to the Supreme Court for the right to be, and also for throwing chicken manure all over our camp, there was actually an older woman in the community who wanted to donate to us a small piece of land where we could, like, we had big plans for our own little community, where we had like security and offering people services, and we still have that dream. I think that it really could work. There's so many people in my peers, there are people who are, you know, homeless and lots of people living in camps, but they also are plumbers and carpenters and parents and grandparents and just people from life, people from society, right? And there's no reason why we couldn't have our own little community or big community, depending on your issue and your municipality. But like everything from plumbing to like, so like outreach work, and it all comes from everybody living there. Mm-hmm. it can work. It really can. Like, I mean, we ran a shelter, DWS, last year for the extreme weather, and it was down in the industrial area, but there are small business owners there. Some of them didn't even know we were there. Others were so supportive at the end of our run there, or of our year there, that like it's just such a good feeling to have people say, you know, that they wanted us to stay, but the landlord sold the building, so we housed between 20 and 30 people every single night, fed them the best we could, redirected people to services if they wanted them, and encouraged them to come back the next night, in which cases they mostly did.
This is what Alexandra Flynn had to say about proposed solutions for supporting unhoused populations.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the backdrop to a lot of this is that we have a terrible housing crisis. We have homes that are, you know, bought and sold as sources of investment for a lot of people. And we don't have enough of the kind of housing that we need to house everybody who needs it. And that is a set of political decisions that have been decades in the making. So that's, I think, to a large extent, the backdrop of what has led us into the situation where people don't have what they need to survive. You know, that ultimately needs change from a political perspective, but I think also the law has at least a little piece to play in this. Nick and I have a lot of arguments over the role of law as being a good thing, given its historical role in injustice and its role in this way of being a source of power for particular people. But some of the best decisions in this space have come from the courts, who have put a limit on what municipalities can do or what officials can do. And I think we need as much of that as we can. There's not a lot of lawyers who are able to practice in this area, but the ones who do it literally from the sides of their desk, often without getting paid. And I think, you know, what you can only imagine if there was more capacity to really challenge some of this stuff.
Once again, this was a piece on the lecture hosted by Nick Blomley in collaboration with Connie Long and Alexandra Flynn. If you want to learn more about the research that was explained throughout the lecture, you can go on belongingsmatter.ca. That is belongingsmatter.ca. Once again, this piece would not be possible without the support from the Local Journalism Initiative. Thank you for tuning in.
My name is Jamie Hill. I'm the Design and Communications Manager at Embark Sustainability. I think my favorite thing about Embark is that you do not have to be the climate know-it-all. You don't have to know everything about the issues that are going on. You really just need the passion to get started. So depending on what you're interested in, you might have a unique skill or interest that you don't think is applicable to climate at all, and it turns out you are the people that we need to be part of the community. So I'd really encourage anybody who has even an inkling of interest in climate or food justice to get on board. Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at EmbarkSustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at EmbarkSustain.
Thank you. got work, but I forgot. Show up, spill coffee everywhere, and cut the tip of my finger off. I've got the opposite of the Midas touch. Everything I lay my hands on gets fucked up. Anxiety swells when someone asks me, what is it you do? Accepting judgment for the vocation I'm forced to pursue. Guess I'll stay here and just keep getting old. Everything I touch is someone else's gold. All I ever do is dishes. Is a virtue unless you're the clientele. Maybe the plebs will pick it up if you decide to yell. I'm tired, man, and I'm too old for this shit. And I'd leave if I can afford to take the hit. But if you want food that's fresh and hot, you'll have to wait a tick. Did you come here to eat a quinoa salad or to be a fucking dick? It's time to cut my hair and get a real job. Cause I am not King Midas, I'm King Bob. All I ever do is dishes.
Bob from their debut record Rookie, based out of Victoria, not quite local but close enough, here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Before that, you heard a piece from Danny about the Belongings Matter lecture, and now we're going to hear another piece from Danny, this one about the Neil Squire Society's holiday hackathon.
You may think of hackathons as multi-day events with computer programmers side-by-side staring at computer monitors while vigorously writing code. Well, for the Neil Squire Society, their recent holiday hackathon tasked its participants with hacking toys. You heard that right. The Neil Squire Society, a disability services and support organization in Burnaby that utilizes technology to empower Canadians living with disabilities, held a hackathon on November 22nd, 2024 at Brentwood Mall that let members of the public sit down and hack toys, equipping them with assistive switches that made these toys more accessible and easily usable for children living with disabilities. CJSF was able to attend the event and spoke with Chad Lehman, the organization's director of innovation and the co-founder of the Neil Squire Society's Makers Making Change program, which connects their volunteers with people with disabilities that are in need of assistive devices.
I think of them sitting around making code. This is more of a physical hackathon where we're making basically parallel circuits and toys, so having an alternate way to control them, turn on and off with different assistive technology that the end user may use. So this is our biggest event. We're doing a part of our Hacking for the Holidays campaign. We're doing 80 events across Canada with the goal to adapt 2,000 toys and switches and get them out for free to our community partners across Canada. So they go to the Children's Hospital here in BC, BC Children's Hospital, the Sunny Hill Unit, as well as many early childhood development center, and even directly to some families that have kids with disabilities so they have the ability to play this holiday season too.
Later on, we asked Lehman how the Neil Squire Society was choosing the specific toys to hack in this event.
They want something that sort of engages at least one of the senses. So something either makes some sound, some lights, or other sort of tactile sort of pieces. Right now, this current group is adapting these cute little fuzzy hedgehogs that when, so they play like a soft sound and music as they play. But we've done some bubble blowers earlier today, and we have some other light up wand sort of toys that we're doing as well. So different opportunities, different kids are going to be motivated to play with different things, so we have a wide variety of sort of options. The nice thing about doing this sort of hackathon thing is anything that takes a battery, you can usually adapt. If you go buy the Switch adapted toys that are commercially available, last year in Canada, there was three different options for sale, and the bubble blower cost $300. So we bought a bunch of bubble blowers at the end of season for about $5 each, and then the volunteers are adapting them. So it's much more affordable, and you get a much wider variety of selection.
Afterwards, Lehman provided some insight for those who may be interested in volunteering with Makers Making Change and the Neil Squire Society.
We served over 12,000 people this last year. So there's a number of programs that run in Neil Squire. If people want to volunteer, we take volunteers for both our digital literacy tutoring program as well as our Makers Making Change program. And that's what the Makers Making Change program is part of this today. So this is where people, they have some skills like soldering or STEM, or they're like an engineering student group at SFU. They can get involved, help build toys, build adaptation, do some of the 3D printing for us. And we should have some grants to run out to help support student groups that want to run this initiative soon. So you should get in touch with us, makersmakingchange.com.
Lastly, we were able to hear from a longtime volunteer with the Neil Squire Society and learn about what continues to motivate him to contribute to the Holiday Hackathon initiative.
The things that we do here, it reaches so many people around, especially in BC, like the place that I live in. So it was really cool knowing that everything that I was doing, even if it was just repairing one or two toys at that one moment, it would be those two-in-one toy that I was repairing would go directly to, I guess, children and families that are living in BC with me. And just knowing that, being able to, everything that I was doing was going towards helping these people, it was really, really nice to know.
As the holidays continue, the Neil Squire Society will continue holding these holiday hackathons in the hopes that these switch-assisted toys are able to reach the homes of children living with disabilities throughout BC and Canada. Thank you so much for tuning into this segment. This has been Danny Nezvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. And this piece would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. This piece can also be listened to on frequencynews.ca.
Listen to music and podcasts from CJSF 90.1 FM with our radio app. It's on-the-go listening made easy. You can tune into all our music, spoken word, and multicultural shows using your device. Our app lets you set reminders so you'll never miss your favorite show again. Stay connected to CJSF 90.1 FM through our community radio app. Download the app from the Apple Store or get it on Google Play.